This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Shamila Ganesan. Tonight, we're doing something a little bit different with the show because we've been hearing constant calls for Parliament to reopen. So we thought we would spend this hour looking at the issues that MPs could be discussing if Parliament were in session.
Bursay's Thomas Fan will be joining us first to give us the lay of the land, and then we'll be diving into how Parliament shapes our financial and economic decisions and the bills that have been pending all this time.
So let us know what you think. Would you like to see Parliament reopen? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. All right, it is 6:07 and Parliament is still not open. So just to give some background, we have, of course, been under a state of emergency since January 11th. The expectation is that this will lift in August, or at least that's when the announced ordinance, that's when this current session will expire. So in this period, parliamentary and state assembly sittings have been suspended, and this has resulted in we've seen ordinances and laws subsequently rolling out without going through the usual process of being debated and discussed in Parliament. This is, of course, under the state of emergency. And there have been increasing calls from MPs, from even the Deputy Speaker, and from you, frankly, for Parliament to reopen to discuss the current state of affairs in our country.
And there have been multiple reasons why these calls have gotten stronger and stronger, right? I mean, I remember early on also there were questions as to why this couldn't have been done, say, virtually, you know, like all things have been done recently. But also, more importantly, questions on how the government both can move forward with things that are essential, but also be held accountable for their jobs without Parliament being open. And as you said, the calls for this has actually come from across party lines. It's not just opposition MPs calling for it. The Deputy Speaker, Dato' Sri Azalina Uthman, said in an open letter in May on Facebook, she said that there's no other way for Malaysia to move forward from the state of emergency but for the government to reconvene Parliament. She also said that suspending Parliament has crippled democracy, it's crippled the government's government officials' capacity to respond to MPs' concerns. And she said, she outlined several things that could be done. She said that, for instance, the legislative body could reconvene without motions of confidence being heard, so that this could, quote unquote, minimize unwarranted drama. She also talked about an interim emergency government with an emergency cabinet that could be formed, and this would involve representatives from all political parties. She even suggested SOPs for Parliament, which included having all of Parliament, MPs and senators vaccinated. As of now, of course, there's been no indication or response that any of this is going to be put into action. But calls for it to happen have only been strengthening.
So political analyst Professor Dr. Azmi Hassan in the FMT, Free Malaysia Today, basically said it's clear, right, that people want Parliament to reopen. And I thought it was particularly significant that he also had a list of things, of issues that need to be debated in Parliament, including slow vaccination rates, the rise in infections, the capacity of ICUs, mental health, employment, the economy, education, the way to move forward. And I think, you know, this really, it's almost as if it was plucked out of the collective hive mind of Malaysia, because these are the things that everybody wants to talk about at the moment, right? Everybody wants to hear the plans. Everybody wants to be able to talk more clearly and openly about what exactly we're going to do, what we have done, how we're gauging the efficacy of the things that have rolled out. And this is before we even get into the issue of spending, because we heard of and covered Pemakasa Plus yesterday. This is following on from Pemakasa, and we I think there are conversations to be had about how it is that we're going to audit or assess government spending when we don't have the checks and balances that Parliament would usually provide.
So just among some of the things that have happened in that interim while Parliament was not in session, for instance, the government amended the National Trust Fund 1988 Act, which allows for them to use the National Trust Fund for the procurement of vaccines as well as related expenditure. On the state level, extra allocations can be dispersed in the 13 states after being approved just by the Mantri Basars or chief ministers, something that drew a lot of criticism. We've had the Parliament's Public Accounts Committee Chairman Wong Kar-wo say last month that they can't perform their duties during the emergency. So all of these are just some of those ways in which national spending and the country's economy are impacted by the fact that Parliament can't sit.
So let us know what you think. Would you like to see Parliament reopen? And what would you like to see discussed, right? What are the issues that you think are most pressing for our MPs, for the government, to be able to debate, to talk about openly? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be speaking to Thomas Phan, who has talked about this, who has called for the reopening of Parliament consistently and strongly for some time now. Thomas is also, of course, the chairperson at Bursay 2.0. If you have questions and thoughts, send them our way and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Our focus tonight is on Parliament still not being open. And conversely, what are the things that need to be discussed, right? So if Parliament were able to open, what ground would we be able to cover right now? We'd like to know your thoughts on this. Would you like to see Parliament reopen? What would you like to see talked about? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at PFM Radio. Joining us now is Thomas Phan, chairperson at Bursay 2.0. Thomas, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Welcome. Thank you.
So you've spoken about this elsewhere and also on our show several times. But to start us off, why do you think it's important for Parliament to reconvene?
Well, I think our system of government, you know, parliamentary democracy, is there so that any government that is in power, there will be a check and balance system built into it. And the parliament, being the legislature, is one of the three branches of government that is there so that they can check any steps or missteps that the government may take. So I think during this time of pandemic especially, it is important for our country that there should be a check and balance system in place.
So with Parliament closed, what are the processes and discussions that have been halted over the past year?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, I think the parliamentarians themselves are not able to debate some of the proposals or motions put forward by the government. So I think that it is very, very much a one-way street right now, where the government just tells us what need to be done, and there's no chance for the people, as represented by the MP, to even question or to push for deeper answers. So I think that is one of the things that is missing, and also select committees within Parliament that were formed, they are not able to look into some of the specific areas like health or vaccination. So I think this is a concern. There's no opposition or no opportunity to question, but also no way to contribute good ideas as well.
In your view, what are the most pressing topics or bills that should be debated in Parliament?
Obviously, in the handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, now we are more than a year into this crisis. And of course, the direct impact of that is the economy itself. We are in a tailspin for the last one over year, and I think with this current lockdown, this economic crisis is going to be worse. And also the vaccination, all these things are linked together. The rollout of the vaccination, I think, is something that is of concern, that up to now, we only are looking at about 4% Malaysians been vaccinated. So these are the key areas, I think, that people want to talk about: the handling of the COVID, the economy, and vaccination.
Could you elaborate on that? Because there have been comments that the Prime Minister needs to allow Parliament to reconvene, all the more because the emergency and the suspension of Parliament hasn't actually stopped the pandemic from turning worse. Is there a way to quantify this? What do you make of this argument?
Well, I think that's a valid argument because the numbers are very clear. On January the 12th, when an emergency was declared, with the reason being given to combat COVID-19, the figures, the daily figures at that time was about 2,000 plus. Now we are looking on average about 7,000 to 8,000 per day, and it has not gone down since January. So obviously, I think the reason given or the measure taken during the emergency did not help and were not meant to basically curb COVID. But we have asserted again and again it was politically driven because the current government at that point in time was at the risk of collapse due to defections by some of their supporting MPs.
And Thomas, from what you've seen, has the government taken demonstrable steps towards showing accountability and transparency in the time that Parliament's been closed?
Well, I think that is really the issue. We do not see any meaningful or substantial engagement between the government and the people. Now, when we talk about the people, really, that's what Parliament is for. It is called the House, of Representatives, Dewan Rakyat, and because that's how we function. We elect representatives to go to the House to basically speak and engage with the government. Now, with the Parliament suspended, there's no way the government could be accountable, and we have not seen anything. I think other than the area of vaccination where the minister in charge, Khairi Jamaluddin, does make effort to update and brief, from all the other ministries of government, we have seen very little engagement or accountability.
So Deputy Speaker Dato' Sri Azalina Othman Said has suggested for an emergency cabinet to be formed, and that would include representatives from all political parties. And she suggests this so that Parliament can reconvene without motions of confidence being heard. What do you think of this suggestion?
Well, I think it's a great idea, and we have come up with a group of other NGO to support YB Azalina's call and the practical recommendation that she made. Because one of the main reasons, I think, I believe, why Parliament has been suspended and it's not open was the fear of the current Perikatan National Government that there will be a motion of no confidence to remove it should the Parliament be convened. So right off from the very start, the proposal by Azalina is that the government could, during this time of emergency, pass an ordinance that no confidence votes should be tabled so that Parliament can convene. And that can be done. So that's off the table. The risk of the government being toppled this way is off the table. Because what is important is really the MPs are able to engage with the government to scrutinize some of the bills and proposals, and also to give suggestions and ideas on how to handle. Because when there is bipartisan engagement from all parties, like what was proposed by Azalina for emergency cabinet, then there is no reason for the opposition to oppose because they are part of that decision-making process as well.
So if we look to other countries and other parliaments where they have continued to function during the pandemic, what SOPs did they put in place and could they have worked for us as well?
Well, I think most democracy where they have parliament sitting, they have already adapted very quickly over this 1 year. So if we look at the UK parliament, for which our parliament is modelled after, they have already done virtual parliamentary sittings. The select committees continue to meet virtually. And in the House of Commons itself, they have social distancing measure. And mind you, if you have seen pictures of the UK parliament, it's a very, very small space. And yet they managed to have social distancing measure with some of the MP joining in virtually from home, from another location. So it is really possible. I think it's just a matter of political will, whether this government wants to do it or not.
And finally, let's talk about the sense of political fatigue that the public is feeling and also a lack of confidence in the government. Would reconvening parliament help to boost the level of trust that people have towards the government?
Well, I mean, certainly, I think what people are concerned about is the political machination, where there is constant scheming to overthrow the government. But if that is taken off the table, the reconvening of parliament would show that this government is a government that is accountable, a government that is willing to be transparent, willing to engage. I think that would go a long way to basically restore people's confidence in our democracy and also our political system. Not holding parliament, not holding debates, I think is a way to really dampen people's confidence in this government as well.
Thomas, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Most welcome.
That was Thomas Phan, chairperson at Berse 2.0, weighing in on the larger argument, really, of why Parliament should reopen, the things that it could be discussing at this moment in time. We are going to be looking after the 6:30 news, more specifically at the financial and economic parts of it, as well as the bills that have kind of stalled while Parliament has remained closed. But we wanted to know what your thoughts are on this and whether you would like to see Parliament reopen. What would you like to see them discuss? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And we have some messages.
So Rosalind says, definitely, without doubt, especially in a crisis like this pandemic, it's even more crucial for government to reconvene, to put all their heads together and do their best in this critical time to handle this crisis to the best of their abilities. Besides, it's also quite obvious that the situation in Malaysia is deteriorating fast due to inefficiencies in handling this crisis. On top of the above, it's crucial to have a check and balance too. Nevertheless, I do agree that this is no time to have an election. Malaysia is not able to handle an election fairly yet.
You know, I was thinking about how we recently spoke about Malaysia's citizenship laws and the fact that it doesn't take into account the way modern society works. And in terms of when it comes to why Parliament has stayed closed, the Speaker, as well as other people who agree with the position, have often fallen back to the Constitution and the rule of law. And I think that this is one of those times in which we couldn't have gone online. I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, because Rosalind, like you say, right, reconvene, putting heads together, being able to debate, being able to have the checks and balances. Never mind the fact that a lot of parliamentarians have now been vaccinated anyway. There is still this issue of, are you really telling me that they did not have phones, a secure connection, and the ability to have convened parliament online? I understand that perhaps per the law, it's not necessarily what's stated, but would it not have been a solution?
Also, particularly since, as Thomas pointed out, the UK government, the UK parliament, which ours is modelled on, have managed to figure their way out of it. We do have a dissenting opinion, though, from Fadzli, who says, not necessarily correct, as if there was no emergency, the rising rates might be higher and the government could be too busy resolving political battles. With this emergency, it would allow government to focus entirely on the COVID-19 combat and also provide protection for government from any legal proceedings that could be triggered by commercial institutions. I just wanted to say that this is an argument I've heard from many people. The, quit politicking, this is a great way to just focus on COVID. And I think one of the things that has gotten a lot of people frustrated is that that doesn't necessarily seem to have happened. We haven't been winning that battle against COVID. And in the meantime, a lot of things are being left undone. So I think that's what's the frustrating part about that argument.
I suppose the difficulty here is also that we simply don't know. We simply don't know because all we know is what we currently have. And looking at the case numbers today, I think it's difficult. It's difficult to make that argument, particularly in the face of something that we would know less about. But please keep those thoughts coming, whether you agree or disagree, right? Would you like to see Parliament reopen? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:37 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are spending today looking at Parliament and the fact that it has remained shut, as many have called for it to be reopened safely. And I think just really asking you what you think of this and also asking what it is that you would like Parliament to discuss. If they were able to open, what do you want to see your MPs represent you for? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have some messages which we'll get to in just a bit, but please keep them coming. For now, though, we thought we would focus on something that is an extension of what we discussed yesterday. So we've seen aid packages rolling out. We've seen spending going for to procure vaccines and the like. And there is this question, right, of how it is that we're assessing the money that's being spent. Where are the checks and balances? So joining us to talk about this now on the line is Dr. Shankaran Nambia, Head of Research at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. Dr. Nambia, thanks for speaking with us. Now, can you highlight some of the key financial discussions that need to be happening in Parliament at this point in time?
Of course, there was the budget that was passed, and there was this decision to withdraw some amount of money from Kwan. And you've had these various disbursements that are being made. And now perhaps a very important issue that needs to be discussed, the question of the debt ceiling. So as you can see, there's some very important discussions that could have been had Parliament not been suspended.
So speaking of the debt ceiling, there's been talk about the need to increase it so that more funding can become available for welfare and stimulus programs. Can you talk to us about what a debt ceiling is and what are some of the discussions that surround it?
I think fundamentally the question is how much debt should you be having as a ratio or as a percentage to GDP? We've set some kind of a limit for ourselves, and this has been the limit that we have been adhering to. Now, given the current situation, again, there is a lot of debate. There are people who say you need to go in for an expansionary budget. You need to, if need be, you must borrow, and so do borrow. The government, on the other hand, from the face of things, seems to be rather concerned about the kind of debt that it's willing to take on. And part of the fear comes from that of being downgraded by rating agencies. I'm not sure if that's a very strong or very good argument, because I would imagine that rating agencies are not just rating Malaysia, they're rating countries all over the world, all over the region. And I don't think they would go hard just on Malaysia for increasing its deficit. It's really a matter of comparison. And I don't think we are, as it stands, faring too poorly. There are some countries in the region where budgets have been really bloated over this period. So I don't think it is a huge problem. I think really what rating agents want to see is, are you doing it for a good reason? Do you have a strategy to get out of your debts? And I think if we had all these answers, raising the debt ceiling wouldn't be such a disastrous event. Obviously, on the minus side, we don't have a terribly good record with our deficits. But I think that towards the later part of Najib's administration, there was a concerted attempt to bring the books to balance. Some attempt was made in that direction. And I think we were performing, I think, reasonably well until COVID came along. So I think as so long as you can show determination, resolve, and you have a clear strategy on how you want to do it, I don't think you will be punished.
So it sounds like you're in favor of increasing the debt ceiling. Could you tell us why the government should consider doing it?
Yes, of course. If you look at the latest disbursement, I don't know if the word disbursement is the right term to use, but anyway, for ease, I'll use it, Pemerkasa Plus. I think that package shows a certain conservativeness. And as a consequence of which, I think the focus has been rather narrow. You have left out, I think, the possible consequences on some groups. Of course, I should think that the attempt to address the needs of B40 are commendable. But I think, on the other hand, some of the other concerns have sort of been skated over. For instance, the M40, they're going through very difficult times too. And I think if you're a civil servant, if you're in government, then it's not too bad. But if there is the fear of job loss, and if you're in the M40 category, things can be rather worrisome. And also, there are a whole class of employees who don't have regular incomes, those freelancers, for instance. And also, what has been handed out to the SMEs might not be adequate. Government, of course, is trying to do what it can to keep them in place, but I'm not sure if it's adequate. So considering all these points of view, I would think that going beyond the present debt ceiling might be a useful strategy to take in these difficult times.
Shankaran, you mentioned Kwan earlier. The emergency law has granted financial provisions that allows the government to tap into these national funds. And this is something that has repeatedly been called out as unethical and irresponsible. What are your thoughts on this?
I think this is a difficult one to respond to, given the very fact that you have the emergency law. It does allow the government to tap into national funds. It is really debatable, very much would depend on the context, etc. Now, if you take one, for instance, this is meant for, it's sort of a generational kind of thing. It's a fund which is supposed to be drawn from at some future point at a time of emergency. Now, some economists have claimed that this is unethical. It is irresponsible. And if I'm not mistaken, the finance minister's response has been that if now is not the time, then when is? You would really need an extended debate on this. On the face of it, yes, it does seem that this is an emergency. This is perhaps one of the few occasions that you'd have in, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years. And perhaps you can qualify it as a moment when the government should be allowed to exercise some discretion. But I think that that's the purpose of Parliament. You would get to defend what you are doing more elaborately if the Parliament were in function. You'd be able to go more deeply into issues such as this.
Dr. Nambia, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. That was Dr. Shankaran Nambia, Head of Research at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, weighing in on the kinds of financial and economic discussions and decisions that should be talked about in Parliament, which, just to say, we are not doing an Insight Story announcing that Parliament has reopened. We're talking instead about the fact that it has stayed shut for now, even though calls for it to open have intensified. We want to know what your thoughts are. You know, do you think, would you like to see Parliament reopen? What would you like to discuss in it? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we are going to be speaking with Badrul Hisham Ismail, Director of Programs at Iman Research, to find out what bills have actually been on the back burner and how they've impacted us. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:49 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're looking today at Parliament and how, if it were open, what are the things that it could be discussing? What would be most pressing to cover at this moment in time? So we've heard a lot about the importance of addressing the way that the government has, in fact, worked to contain COVID-19. We've discussed money. And now we want to look at bills, the bills that have not passed because Parliament has not been in session. And for that, we're crossing over to Badrul Hisham Ismail, Director of Programs at Iman Research. Badrul, thanks for speaking with us.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for inviting.
So let's start with what are the key bills that are put on hold at the moment, given Parliament's closure?
Well, two bills come to mind. One is the IPCC, which is the Independent Police Conduct Commission, and then the Sexual Harassment Bill.
And are there bills that the government has said they would pass by the last Parliament sitting, but just didn't happen?
Well, I'm not sure about whether they say they're going to pass it, but the two bills that I mentioned just now were set to table this year. It was supposed to be tabled last year, but it was postponed. Then the emergency happened, of course. So we had to wait until after August, I guess.
And if we look at the long-term impact of these delays, what are they?
Well, these two bills is very important. But the IPCC, for example, IPCC bill. And recently we've been seeing a lot of the death in custody that has happened. And a lot of other sort of abuse of power that has been reported by the police, either mistakenly because of confusion of the SOP, of the current emergency and all that. But regardless of why, but the fact that we don't have a body or a bill that would sort of protect citizens from this kind of abuse of power is something that is going to affect us in the long term because, you know, tabling it, debating it is one thing, and then passing it is another thing. And then, you know, the process to actually make it, you know, put into practice, so to speak, is going to be, you know, not something that can be easily done and quickly done as well.
One of the bills that have faced a delay exactly for this reason was the MA63 bill. How has that delay affected Putrajaya's relationship with East Malaysia?
I would say, interestingly, the relationship between Putrajaya and East Malaysia is good if we talk about politically. PN government is having sort of a good relationship with both Sabah and Sarawak government at the moment. Of course, Sabah government is a PN government because since last year. And the Sarawak government right now is also a PN support coalition. So in a sense, politically, I don't think the MA63 delay has any effect on that kind of relationship. And we can even see with how Sarawak is being prioritized for the vaccination process, whether it's for, you know, people buy that it's for the election or not. But the fact that they are getting those kind of treatment shows that the delay of that bill has not affected their relationship at all.
So a central concern, and one that comes up time and time again, is the country's ability to deal with the pandemic. How do you think Parliament's closure has impacted this?
Well, the problem with not having the Parliament convening is not having enough minds and voices coming up with solutions that it's being presented by the government at the moment, and the less heads and the less brains we have in coming up with a plan and an exit strategy for the COVID crisis means that less effective it can be. So that's one aspect in terms of COVID. But other issues do exist outside of COVID. Even before COVID, we have a lot of things that we have to go through, and not having the Parliament reconvening meaning we cannot push and look for solutions for those issues as well. That is as important as COVID.
And let's look at the MPs, right? What are some functions that the MPs can't perform because Parliament hasn't been running?
Well, like I mentioned just now, pushing for solving other issues that is not necessarily COVID-related, that is as crucial as COVID. That's one thing. And one of the things that we also know, at least prior to COVID crisis and prior to PN becoming the government of the day, is the government reforms committees that we have, trying to push for reforms in, for example, the electoral reforms, parliamentary reforms, and all that. And all that has been put on hold because of the Parliament is not convening. And those are also one of the things that the MPs have to be responsible of.
And to follow on from something that you mentioned earlier, you mentioned the sexual harassment bill. Could you take us through why it's important and what the impact of its delay has been?
Well, one of the things that is also important other than having the bill turn into legislation is in terms of symbolic nature. When you know that the Parliament have, passed a bill that, that the specific bill, at least whether it's going to work legally or not, but symbolically it shows that the government and the politicians are serious in showing to the public that they are, concerned about this kind of harassment that has been happening. And it can sort of deter in a sense that, when people on the ground see that the government is serious about it, then, they will at least think twice and probably at least try to find out more, try to learn more about the issue, trying to have more discussion with their peers and all that. So not having that in the picture, is not going to nail down the seriousness of the issue.
So on that note of something being of symbolic value as well as the actual value of it, what about Parliament itself? What is Parliament's role as a symbol of an effective government?
It's important to know that the people have the channel for them to voice out their concerns through their representative, regardless of which political side you're in or you're on. And I think one of the anxiety that a lot of people who have been very vocal in pushing for the reconvening of the Parliament is the fact that, we have no channel for people in power to listen to us other than our tweets, which is really not saying much. And that only, catered to a very specific demographic. And that kind of emotion, feeling of cut off from power, who are deciding on not just your livelihood, your lives, is something that is, putting people in unnecessarily anxiety.
Badrul, thank you so much again for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Badrul Hisham Ismail, Director of Programs at Iman Research, talking about some bills, some discussions that have been on the back burner with Parliament not being open. We've been asking you for your thoughts. Would you like to see Parliament reopen? What would you like to see discussed? And we have messages.
So Maggie says agreeing to reopen Parliament would be a plus for the current government. It speaks of their maturity and sensibility. After all, for how long can one run away and not face the music? It would be to its advantage and definitely a wise move to share the heavy responsibility of fighting the COVID pandemic. You know, that's actually a great point, right? Because despite what the government has said, that the reason Parliament is shut is because the COVID-19 pandemic takes precedence, there is a great argument to be made, and it's being made repeatedly, that having Parliament open would actually make that battle more effective.
Yes. And in fact, we also have Ravi who says, I really want to see a breakdown on what was spent and where, which I think goes back to that point that Maggie, you made about facing the music. So not so much in terms of and something that we heard our guest, Dr. Nambia, make earlier as well, which is if Parliament is open, you get to talk about why you made the decisions you make. You get to defend it then and there. And I think that that's a very productive thing. I also wanted to read this message because it speaks to the symbolic thing that we were talking about. Because CY says, let's be real, I don't see how reconvening Parliament would help to address COVID when we're still under the emergency ordinance, because MPs can check and balance to death, but will the government act based on debates at Parliament? And CY, you know, that's a valid point, but I think there's also the other thing, which is we need to hear it. We need to hear the discussions. We need to hear people making these arguments and pushing forward relevant points. I know that not all of us sit by our laptops or TVs and watch Parliament all day, but the point is that it's a public session and it will be reported after.
No, that's absolutely it. I think that whether we think they're going to be effective or not, as voting, as a democratic country, as a voting public, it's our right to know how these decisions are made.
So keep those thoughts coming. We'll be back to go through more of them after the 7 o'clock news. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.